Hi, everyone. I'm Anita Lustria, and in my world, conversation is king. A number of years ago, when I lost my big job of being a radio talk show host, I decided I could mope around and be sad. Okay, I did a bunch of that. Or I could move on and start a podcast so I could keep the conversation going. That's how this podcast was born. As you listen, you'll hear about things that are important to me, and hopefully you'll resonate with these topics as well. Welcome to Faith Conversations. On the podcast today, I'm happy to have back, it's been a while, John Lustria, my son. Welcome, John.
It's good to be back.
Great to have you, and I want to give your proper title, and I always get it wrong, but...
I'm the education coordinator at the National Museum of Civil War Medicine.
I always want to say education specialist.
Well, I used to be the education specialist.
I'm not all that far off. I was right once upon a time.
Yeah, you were once right, but you're not now.
Now, so. Not any longer. And you love that, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. And also, just a quick shout out before we get into this. The museum, National Museum of Civil War Medicine, is doing all kinds of cool stuff on the Facebook page, on their YouTube channel. You know, all kinds of new digital content, Facebook live streams where you can ask questions in the comments, trying to do our part to kind of keep people connected during this time of physical distancing, trying to make it more physical distancing and less social distancing, if that makes sense.
Yes, it makes total sense. I appreciate that. Mike and I bought a membership to the National Museum of Civil War Medicine, something that I suggest for people. Whether it's this museum that we're talking about here, where John works,
we'll take it if you want to give, but yeah, museums everywhere,
local, yeah, wherever you're living, whatever museums, you know, support them because they can't have the public in right now, and that's their main means of livelihood. So far, you're employed, and that is not the case for so very many during the pandemic, and it's really, really difficult. And Mike and I, it's something we talk about and pray about regularly. So that's something that's happening now, which is why we thought it would be a good time to do a movie podcast, which John, you and I have done together before. People sheltering in place, they can be watching movies more easily. I'm sure they're watching a lot of them. And we suggested The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, and that's what we're going to talk about today. One other quick thing. You and I went to record a couple of weeks ago, and there was all this buzz and horrible sounds, and I finally realized my poor mixer, who had given her life for the podcast, died. Mm. So I'm really grateful Guitar Center was still packing up things and shipping out, and I was able to get a new mixer within a couple of weeks, and back going again. So again, I'll say I'm grateful to those who support the podcast via Patreon, which is that little P icon down at the bottom of the homepage at anitalustria.com. You can support via specific amount per podcast. You can give $1 a podcast. I just release 4 per month. And so, or more. Obviously, I'd love it to be more, but I'm just saying you can do it according to your budget. And that's what I like about Patreon. You can also give and do that via PayPal or Apple Pay. You can give via Apple Pay to Anita Lustria or PayPal, producer@anitalustria.com. Some of you might also be thinking, hey, I'm like not in the digital world. I just want to mail a check. You can do that. 8 White Oak Terrace, Sarasota, Florida, 34237. Whew, I haven't given that commercial in a while. So, all right, that's behind us. Let us enter in. And this is where I turn the reins over to you, John, to lead this podcast forward.
Yes. So since it's been a little while since we've done one of these, the kind of basic format we borrow heavily from Harry Potter and the Sacred Text podcast, which I highly recommend you listening to if you're a Harry Potter person. But basically, it's tackling a, you know, if you tackle a piece of art or fiction. This, of course, based on a true story, but you know, it's a piece of art. If you tackle it with you know, some rigor and apply some spiritual practices to it, analyze it, you know, you might be surprised what kind of good things it might call you to. As Richard Rohr likes to say, if it's true, it's true everywhere all the time. And so we're kind of borrowing from that idea.
And I'll add, as Rosalie DeRosay said, all truth is God's truth, no matter where you find it.
Right, exactly. So that's sort of the idea behind this. Today, of course, we're talking about The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind on Netflix, and we're looking at it through the theme of courage. But most importantly, if there are people out there that haven't seen it, we're going to give a 30-second recap just to kind of give you a loose sense of what happens during the movie. So do you want to go first, Mom, or should I?
You know what? I'm good to go first. Maybe if you would hold it up so I can see the 30 seconds counting down, because
I will do that.
Yeah, and you're laughing, but I'm feeling a little more prepared here today. The Good. Last movie caught me off guard.
Caught both of us off guard because it had been a while since we'd seen it.
Yeah, and it might be fun for people if you've not listened to the previous movie podcasts. You know, if you are sheltering in place currently, you can go back and watch those movies. Just go to anitalustria.com, and all you have to do is click on guest links and look up John's name, and that's where you'll quickly find, be an easy way to find those movie podcasts.
Yeah, that's right. It might be fun either to listen to them for the first time or to relive them again, because I think all the movies we've chosen to date have been real good ones.
I would agree with that. So, all right. So I'm going to give a 30-second, I started to say minute, 30-second recap. You tell me go and then turn it up there.
Okay. When I say go.
Yep.
3, 2, 1, go.
This movie is set on the continent of Africa in the country of Malawi. And there's a 13-year-old boy, young teenage boy, who is going to school there. His parents can no longer afford the fees. He gets kicked out of school. His deep love is science. And so there's a big drought that happens during the movie. And he wants to figure out how he can help save his village from the drought. And so he figures out how to do that. My last sentence, he figures out how to do that. I got it in. I didn't say how, because I thought that was pretty good.
That was solid. You got a little hung up on how old the boy was.
I know.
He's about 13. Well, I mean, he's kind of like, you know, he's right around there.
Which is kind of like me in real life, hung up on some immaterial detail. Just don't say yes.
Oh, Lord. And the boy's name is William.
Oh, thank you. I didn't get hung up on the name, obviously.
No. Okay.
All right, let me get the timer going, and I will hold it up for you as well.
Okay.
First of all, I have to get 30 seconds up here because I have my 6-minute tea timer set up. So I have to move it around. Get 30. Okay. Whew. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, and go.
Okay, they're in Malawi. There's a terrible drought. It's not good. The father, Trywell, sends a kid, William, to school, but then eventually he can't anymore because he can't pay the money, and the drought's going on. It's getting really bad. And then William's like, I know science. And like, there's this book, A Conductor, or whatever it was called. And then, yeah, I know how to do it. And Trywell, the father's like, no, you're going to farm. And then William's like, yeah, I know how to build a windmill. And then everything gets resolved in the last 20 minutes, successfully builds a windmill, and it's all a true story.
Bing! What? Oh! the little time. Oh my goodness! Did you practice?
No, actually, I did not practice at all. I'm just that good.
Just that good. I'm just that good, and I don't think highly of myself at all.
That's right.
Wow.
I believe strongly in humility as a virtue.
Excellent. That was excellent. I see falling
the
short.
The thing that we both left out of our summaries is the subplot with the sister and the teacher.
Yes.
So Trywell's the name of the father, and William's the name of the son, and then William has a sister whose name is Annie, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Also, yeah, I can't remember the teacher's name that Annie. Anyway, there's a teacher in there. There are a couple of teachers. Librarian as well, that's important in this.
Yeah, so, but anyway,
Yeah.
there's kind of this push and pull about Annie. She has a secret romance with one of the teachers at the
Yes.
school, and they end up kind of running away together. But the William, the kid who harnesses the wind
Yes.
and builds the windmill, he gets sort of the idea from oh, it was a
Oh,
dynamo.
yes.
That's the word that they kept saying, dynamo. He has this
Dynamo.
electric light or this light that he powers by pedaling
Yeah, when he pe so when he's
bicycle.
riding his bicycle at night, and as he pedals, the little light comes on so he can see where he's riding at night. And William sees this, and yeah, they call it a dynamo. And the wheels in his brain start kind of turning and churning on that. And I would also mention early on, there's another piece of the plot too, has to do with Trywell, William's father, his brother, who wants to sell out the village. What's you know, sell
Trees.
trees that are gonna end up harming the village because the trees are what hold back some of the water when it when big heavy rains come. And so that's another
Yeah,
piece of
so
the story.
it's in the context of the movie, it's quite literally feast or famine.
Yeah, oh yeah. Okay, good.
So, okay, yeah, I think we loosely covered the plot details
Yes,
well
yes.
enough. Let's talk about courage.
Yeah.
And so in the very, very beginning of the movie, Trywell's father ends up dying. That's like the first thing that happens in the movie. And first note that I wrote down is the courage to move on in the face of loss.
Ooh. Ooh, I
Which is
like
not
that.
easy. And actually, kind of what you speak to a little bit in the intro to this very podcast, when you lose your radio job, obviously there's a certain amount of grief that's healthy, but there's a certain amount of courage in moving on and doing something else.
Well, and I'm thinking even as we record this podcast, you know, the courage to move forward in the face of loss. We're sitting in a boatload of loss for so many, all of us on one level or another, but to varying degrees, others much more.
Well, and it's something that's whenever this is over, and this will be over, it cannot go on forever. Whenever
Right.
this is over, it's going to take a certain amount of courage
Yes.
to move on in the face of whatever we have lost.
Yes.
It's been weird, being inside, but as strange as it sounds, it will be weird to go outside again and do regular things. And so that's going to take a certain degree of courage,
Yeah, isn't
as
that
well.
interesting? Hey, I wanted to ask you, even though we're in the middle of this discussion, John, you're a cup half full person. Actually, I call you a cup three quarters full. I often describe you that way. And I'm a cup half full person. But how have you been managing during this time period? I know you've been working still. You've been doing these cool Facebook lives for the museum. I've been enjoying watching those. So work, I know, helps to have meaningful, to have purpose, etc. But yeah, how you doing?
It kind of comes and goes. Some days it's like, oh, this will be fine. I mean, I take comfort in that this will indeed end at some point. I mean, I had just when this all started, a series of vacations lined up, including but not limited to coming to see you,
Yes.
and a variety of other things that now, well, didn't happen.
Yeah.
I
A
was going to
family
get to see.
reunion we were gonna have
Yeah,
also.
family reunion. I was going to get to see my best man was going to come visit me, and we were going to spend a weekend together, which we hadn't done in like several years. So that's out. So I mean, I had a few days of moping that just wasn't going to happen. But the thing about human beings is they have a remarkable ability to adapt to things. And so now it's like, well, here we are. And just kind of moving on. And if you can believe it, I've actually not thoroughly enjoyed working, which is a terrible thing to say because so many people, are struggling. I'm so thankful I have a job, and
Yeah.
a lot of what I do is good, and I'm happy that I'm doing it. But there is definitely a very real piece of me that's bitter that I can't just do nothing.
You know, I've had a similar feeling. You know, I'm a spiritual director, and actually, I'm busier than ever because people are in need of talking and having someone listen to their lives and be that steady strength and, you know, just to focus in and see where God is moving and working in people's lives. So I have had new clients come along, but there's been that sense along the way too, that I, and even when my mixer broke, you know, when it died, I thought, oh, I actually can kind of relax. And, but then, oh, thank you, Guitar Center. You sent it so quickly. We're back in business. And so there is that sense that a lot of people talking about all their relaxing and just watching and yeah. So I've had a little piece of that.
It's all relative.
It is. But also deeply grateful for meaningful work and for having work. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this all relates to the movie, obviously, because, we're talking about courage and through loss, and that's where we kind of got off track a little bit, but still on track.
The next note that I have written down, so the Williams family, not terribly rich,
right.
But they, you know, Williams' dad Trywell scrounges up the money to send him to school, and so my next note was the courage to send kids to school at great personal expense, to really commit resources to something that you think is important, but that you know might stretch you just a little bit beyond where you would like to be. That's a very hard thing to do.
And it was interesting in the movie too. I would say that William's mom felt education was more important than William's dad. He believed it was important, but I think there was a time where he just felt like, I can't make the sacrifice anymore. And you know, William's mom was working maybe harder to figure that out, how something could happen. Or like you don't agree.
I don't, okay. But I might need to just go back and watch it. But since we were going to record a couple weeks ago, there's some time now between right. when I saw the movie. But I had a vague memory of them saying something like, and the dad saying that, you know, we wanted to send William to school so that, you know, he could do better things than us, or he wouldn't have to work as hard or something like that. I felt like that was a big thing.
And I think so. But I think maybe what changed, what turned the tide was the crisis that happened in the village.
Well, yes.
Obviously, it turned the tide in two ways. One, no longer were the funds available to send William to school. And Trywell felt like William's body, just his physical presence and ability to work in the fields was needed. And he didn't really see he kind of looked at what William was doing as little boy stuff, I think. So one of the things that William did, William would go to the what I'll call the town dump, if you will. If any of you grew up in rural America or live there, you probably grew up knowing or having a town dump before it was maybe bulldozed and you didn't do that anymore. Recycling became the thing, of course, and much more important, but went to this scrap heap of just junk, and he would scrounge for little electronic pieces. And, you know, he was always tinkering with radios and whatnot because he loved that and had a bent towards science and that kind of science specifically, kind of electronics.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here. And so going to school, of course, obviously feeds that side of him, and then suddenly he can't do it anymore, and that's you know, challenging, of course. Let's see here. One of my other notes, I have the courage to say no. So when Trywell votes against selling the trees as basically kind of a short-term solution, but basically everyone else ends up selling. And so it's, you know, it's always tough to be the one person.
The holdout,
That stands up when you think it's right. Now, sometimes you can end up looking really dumb doing that sort of thing, which is why it takes courage. You have to really believe that you're right about that sort of thing. But
And the reality is Trywell was the one that was right, but it didn't matter. You know, everyone else voted against him. His brother had a strong personality, and they voted to sell the trees. His brother made the argument better. His brother was probably better with words. So isn't that interesting? So they sell the trees, which takes away the barrier that can help keep flood waters back, or a way of soaking up, flood waters that just come right into the fields. And but then flood waters, it really aren't an issue right then because it's an issue of drought coming.
Well, and then we should also mention one of the most, I think, notable examples of personal courage. So one of the strategies that they come up with is Malawi is a nominal democracy, and the president or prime minister or whatever he is comes to their area, and it's a campaign rally basically. It's all self-aggrandizement, but the idea is if someone gets up to the microphone at this rally and in an unscripted way, starts talking about the crisis, surely they can't be ignored. And the village chief ends up doing just that, but he pays ultimately with the cost of his life. And going up there,
The man going up to the microphone pays with his life. Yes. Yes.
And going up there, he had to have a sense of what he was risking. I mean, it was like a lot of people are dubious about the sincerity of the democracy in Malawi, and rightly so in that case.
I see courage in William's mother, who keeps pressing him to find a way to get back into the classroom. And he sneaks into the science class only, because he's starting to believe that he has some sort of a solution to the drought issue. And then at some point he realizes that there are specific parts that he needs. One of those being the dynamo. That the light, he needs to figure out how that works. And actually, for a time, he also, I don't know if he gets the teacher, his sister's boyfriend, to get him into the library, but the librarian becomes a real friend and someone who kind of protects him and gives him space and time to read. She needed a little convincing, but space and time to read these books that can help him figure out electronically, initially, I think, how to get a radio going, and then beyond that, as he was tackling figuring out how the dynamo worked.
Yeah, and I think it like takes real courage to kind of know when to break rules,
Oh, say that again. You kind
because at
of
that
broke
point,
up. It takes courage to what?
I said, I think it takes courage to know when to break rules, because at that point, William was by the book not allowed to be in the library because Trywell had not paid the fees, and so he wasn't supposed to be at school. Which, when you think about how education is, that's so messed up that like you're not allowed access to knowledge if you don't pay. I mean, philosophically, that's kind of messed up. But anyway, I get it. Teachers need to be paid. There's all kinds of good reasons that's a thing. But anyway, so technically, he wasn't supposed to be in there. And knowing, even not knowing that this kid might have a way to solve the issue of drought, just saying, clearly this kid's hungry for knowledge, knowledge for knowledge's sake. I mean, this is a good thing, so I won't tell anybody about this. So she's breaking a rule, but she's doing it for the right reasons, I guess you could say.
Yeah, I like
And
that.
it's tough to know when that is sometimes, I think, but it's important to know when that is.
I think it goes back to standing on the strength of your personal convictions. It's not just, oh, I like such and such, so I'm going to stand by my opinion. This is something stronger than opinion. It's a conviction.
Yeah, but sometimes convictions can be bad. I mean, Hitler has stood on
Well,
the strength of its convictions.
okay, thanks for that. Yeah, all right.
No, but there's something to that. Like it's standing on the strength of your convictions and really kind of hoping you're right. And I think a very easy way to, well, I shouldn't say easy, a good way to think about this is, in what ways does this benefit the least of these, and things like that, or how does this benefit my neighbor, and things like that.
Which, man, I'm telling you, that's been a big conversation in the context of our church, which obviously, you know, online, like most, like all ought to be online, not meeting in person. I'm just going to give my opinion here. And Zoom classes that I'm a part of, you know, what does loving neighbor look like during a time of sheltering in place, you know? Also, I think one of the things that's interesting, there's an element of courage, I think, to stand up for and believe in a 13-year-old. So I it made me think of Greta Thunberg, who's a big environmental activist, who is not much older than William in this story, which I don't know if we said. This is based on a true story. I don't know if we said that at the beginning. You probably did.
That was the last thing I said during my 30-second recap. Oh. And it's all true.
Oh, phew. Okay. I was probably so looking at the clock that I missed that. So I thought of Greta Thunberg. You know, there are others, Malala, that we know of from, I think, Pakistan. Anyway, so, you know, you can know a lot. You can be right and true and brave and brilliant as a young person. But it often takes adults believing in you. And sometimes that can be a hard sell because you are 13. 12, 14, you know, adults often, sadly, are going, what do you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, part of the reason why adults, I think, are so skeptical about all that sort of thing is, I would say per capita, there are dramatically fewer 13-year-olds that are awesome and geniuses and are going to change the world than there are, say, 33-year-olds that are going to do that, but to kind of say that there are none is deeply foolish. But that for me about believing in kids is one of the messages of anime, which is just such a beautiful
art form
genre of television, because it's something that I always kind of find all goofy. It's the main characters in so many anime series are all like right around in the 13-year-old age, and they always end up saving the world. And you know, sometimes it's like, oh, this is a little goofy, but I think there's a great message in there about how you know, if you just trust and empower more, you know, kids, then the world might be saved more than it is.
So I'll add to that, that I think another reason that we don't pay attention to kids, adults, ego comes into play. You know, these younger people, that ego is not nearly as much of an issue. And ego comes into play for us because we're thinking, oh, I should be, you know, we're not saying any of this out loud, like, oh, this should be me coming up with this, or that I'm much smarter.
It's the subtext of the Smarter Than a Fifth Grader game show.
Yes. There you go. Thank you for that.
Idea.
Thank you for that cultural reference there. That's good.
Well, but it's tapping into something that is kind of unfortunately true. People are sort of embarrassed that someone younger than them might be significantly smarter than them, which is kind of a bummer that people are embarrassed about that. I mean, I get it. I mean, everyone has ego, but it's like, we should celebrate the fact that, you know, other people are you know, smarter than us or know more.
Certainly in certain areas, you know, I might have general knowledge and maybe a more specific knowledge in a particular area, but I don't have big particular knowledge in every area. So, right. And I'm thinking about you too. You know, you,
I would not trust you to build a windmill.
You would not trust me to build a windmill. Yeah.
I wouldn't trust you to build a windmill.
Yeah. And, ego would not take over for me. I wouldn't trust me either. I would gladly trust the 13-year-old, but I'm even thinking about you, you know, who you give tours. I mean, one part of your duties, you have a lot of social media duties, et cetera, but you give tours throughout the year at the museum. And I'm just wondering about younger groups. I bet there are days where they ask way better questions than some of your adult groups that come through.
Oh, absolutely. And there are just as many days when they ask really dumb questions. Okay. God bless them.
All right, I'll give you that.
I So you're absolutely right. Sometimes that's like, wow, these kids are sharp.
Yeah.
And other times I've had one kid ask me, is that a bench? I'm like,
yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okie dokie.
I'm talking like middle school kids. And I don't know if they were trying to be like, you know, smart alecky or what. But I was like, yes, kid, it is indeed a bench.
Oh, too good. All right. Carrying on. So an important piece of this is that this is a 13-year-old, and there's a lot going on surrounding that with all the characters.
Mm-hmm. There's obviously we could talk for quite a bit on this, but in the interest of moving things along, my last two kind of big notes that I have here are that I wrote down the courage to stand up to friends rather than enemies, because William eventually, ultimately what he needs, he gets the dynamo from his sister's boyfriend's bike, but he took the bike. So he needs something to power this, and he needs his dad's bike. But his dad won't give it to him because he thinks, you know, this is all silly, frivolous, etc. And so William gets his pals. He's friends with some, you know, I guess high school age guys.
Yeah.
And they go and confront him, and they're like, "Ooh, is this going to be a violent altercation?" It was very close to, but having the courage to stand up to both a friend and an authority figure—I mean, that's really challenging.
Yes.
And then the other note that I have, and we can talk about both of these, is having the courage to change your ways when they're not working. And the ego comes in again there.
And I think that's equally powerful. You're right. I think those are both really good. I think, you know, William came to the point where he really knew he had the knowledge to do this, but he did not have the proper equipment, and everything in order to do this was makeshift. And but he knew he could do it. However, he needed that, as you said, that one last big piece, which was his father's bicycle. And, you know, and his dad used that to go to villages to get things they need. You know, this was part of what kept their family going as well, was the ability to more easily and quickly get somewhere and bring something back. So, you know, this is not a small ask. This is not a bicycle that's like some of ours, maybe hanging up in a garage on the wall. This is something that's used on a daily basis. And so I think that's what makes the ask all the more difficult and courageous.
Mm-hmm.
He commandeers his friends to help him, because they were a little bit of a hard sell too, until he got this radio going, and they were all standing around and they couldn't believe it. And so they're like, "Oh, okay, we now believe." I go back to the biblical story, the centurion whose child is sick, Jesus heals it. It's like, I believe, help my unbelief. You know, they don't know how it works. They believe he did it. I don't know how it works, but we're going to go with you to your dad, and we're going to stand there and be a support. So, and then the other piece, I'm assuming you're talking about Trywell, the dad, who had to come to a point where he realized this is beyond my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his wife had some really strong discussions, the two of them, where she kind of pressed in, and he really had to think long and hard and dig deep about what he was going to do. How much did he believe in his son? How much did he believe, all right, this might be beyond my understanding? So to your point, the ego piece, I have to lay that down and believe in this child.
Well, and she kind of basically confronted him like, you know, you wanted William to go to school.
Yes,
you know,
this is what you get.
Do his thing.
That's right. that's a great point.
And she pointed out how basically towards the end of the movie, he had basically alienated everybody in his life, including soon to be his wife at that point. He had alienated William. Annie had went away, and no one in the village liked him. I mean, he was really burning bridges very quickly.
Yeah. And so after a long, hard think, he decided to give the bicycle up.
And a degree of credit goes to Trywell even for that decision. I mean, you can
Yes.
say his back's up against the wall, but some people would go down with the ship and
Yep.
just be wrong literally till they died.
Yep.
And yes, things were pretty dire. It was kind of a last resort, but he did end up making that decision, so he gets like a little credit.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. Yeah. All right, what's next?
So now it's time to shift to our spiritual practice. And today we're going to be doing Havruta. It's a Jewish practice. The whole idea is, so I will ask a question, I will then propose an answer, and then mom will
Whoops,
propose
you're breaking
answer.
up, so I want you to say that again. You'll propose a question.
Yes, I'll propose a question, and then I will propose an answer,
Ah.
and then you will propose an answer. And the whole idea behind it is that the truth is neither in your answer nor in mine, but in the discussion as a whole,
Okay.
which is just such a beautiful idea.
It is sort of
So,
midrash-ish, I'll say.
kind
Ish.
of.
Yeah, ish, I
Well,
said.
my understanding of Midrash is it's like basically biblical fan fiction, like you kind of make up a story.
Okay, all right.
I mean, like obviously there is discussion involved, but
Yeah.
it's I think a different thing.
Okay, very good. I'll give you that.
So my question that
I'll
I
have
propose
courage and
is,
I'll say that the younger person is right. Okay.
well, that's very good of you.
Yeah.
So the question I propose is, why was it so important to send William to school for Trywell, even though he wouldn't ultimately let William build the windmill? And my proposed answer is that he, a part of it was he couldn't let go of the idea that, William is growing up, and not only growing up, but growing up into basically wanting to do something that isn't the hardworking farming that Trywell knew about. So it's just a different thing that he has trouble recognizing the authenticity of, and much less that his child is growing up into that.
All right, and so what am I doing again?
So you chew on that, and then
Yeah,
you propose a different
different
answer to
scenario.
him.
Yeah, I'm chewing on that because I really like that. I think that's, I think, I have a well-worn path to saying the younger person is right in our family. So I
Well,
like that.
and it should be noted that you are younger than Mike, so.
Yeah. I'm not sure if Mike has as well-worn a path to know. Yeah, he's got a well-worn path too. Okay, I see that. Let me think what else what I will propose. So I actually want to hear you say yours again, because
Yes.
I got stuck on one part of it. I want to hear the whole, yeah.
Yeah, the question again is, why was sending William so to school so important for Trywell, even though when the rubber meets the road, he won't let William build the windmill? And I said, part of it is he can't let go of the fact that his kids are growing up, and that not only are his kids growing up, but they're growing to be something that isn't the hardworking farmer that he was raised to be.
Yes. Okay. I think an alternate possibility, it was important for Trywell to send William to school, to look good, to appear to be, keeping up with the Joneses, if you will. Keeping up with the neighbors, others sending their kids. He wanted to look as good and wanted to and a little peer pressure wanted to do that. He kind of balked at different times about spending the money, but part of that was because things were really tight. I think he wanted to do it to look good. I think he wanted to do it also to please his wife because his wife was very much a proponent of education and talked about that was talked about in the movie early on especially. So I think he wanted to please his wife. I think he wanted to impress villagers and William really wanted to go, and anyone with kids knows when the kid twists your arm, at some point it can get hard to say no. echoed. I will say that that's true, having had a child, generally, who knows how to twist.
yes, guilty as charged.
Okay.
I think another part of that is that, like, I kind of like you were just saying, I think he likes the idea of doing something nice for his kid. You know, he's like, oh, this is a cool thing that William gets to do. But then in a time of crisis, he I think his true belief comes out, like, well, you know, we all know this was kind of silly anyway. Right. So come back and work on the farm.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas William is like, well, I didn't think it was silly.
Right. And in fact, I'm going to save my village. Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. I agree.
So, yeah, that's Havruta. So the truth is neither in your answer nor mine, but in the discussion as a whole.
I agree with that. Because I think it is a little bit of everything, mm-hmm. as Havruta suggests.
And so now we turn to blessings. Time to bless a character from the movie. I would like, I'll go first.
Yeah.
I want to bless Annie, the sister, for being in a tough spot, basically. You know, she's interested in this guy who wants to leave the village when, you know, maybe that's not something she expected when they first started dating. Her loyalties are being pulled in a variety of directions. Her family wants her to stay just to have her around because, you know, you like keeping families together. You know, she wants to help out her family who is struggling. She knows that, you know, her boyfriend might be able to help, you know, her brother. There's just all of these people kind of vying and kind of telling her what they think she should do with her life. And she ends up, leaving with her boyfriend to go to another city. And, you know, she feels that part of it is helping the family because then it's one less mouth to feed, which of course is agonizing for the parents because they miss their daughter. But
they also realize that's true. One less mouth to feed. So say that last part again, because you broke up. This blessing is also for a lot of people.
Just a blessing for people that find themselves in positions like that, where a lot of people are kind of demanding your time, your loyalty, and, you know, telling you what they think is best. And just a blessing for people that have the courage to say and just decide, here's what I think is best, and just stick to that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I was going to bless Annie also, but I will switch that up. I will add one thing to your blessing. One of the reasons I was going to bless her is because she had aspirations for higher education, and gave that up. And so I'm going to bless her mom. I'm going to bless Trywell's wife, William, and Annie's mom, because she really, the whole way through, stuck to her convictions or her strong opinion that education is highly valuable. I mean, she really pressed in against Annie in trying to encourage her to stay, that if you go, you're going to be giving up that opportunity to go on for further education. You can stay here while you go on. You can stay, you know, all kinds of things. But if you get married and move on, you'll have a child, education will be a thing of the past, because in that area of the world, in a developing nation, it just wasn't going to be possible to have a child and go to school, etc. So the mom pressed in, you know, pushed against Trywell, the dad, stood for her convictions that, no, at all cost, you know, I believe in William, the 13-year-old. I believe in our son. And she really pushed back against Trywell, to your point earlier in our conversation, to the point that it almost broke their marriage, but it did not.
She had what I would term the line of the movie, and she was the other person I was going to bless. When do we stop losing?
Yes, that's the quote. I think you're right. That's the quote. When do we stop losing? Which I think speaks to something that is really hard. When do we stop losing? Puts us in this space to make an incredibly hard decision that means in the short run we might lose more before the gaining starts. Right? I think that's...
And if you don't want to bless that, you don't have a soul.
That's right on, right on. So that's, I'm blessing the mom, who I think was a powerful figure. I think this is a great movie to watch if you're a child, if you're a woman looking for someone who has great strength, whether you're a daughter, whether you're a husband. I mean, I think all the way around, I think this is an awesome movie. Another thing I want to mention about this movie, we have watched another movie based in the continent of Africa, in Uganda. And I there's another movie that I watch from time to time, and this watching The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind makes me want to watch it again. It's called Yesterday. And this reminds me of it in this sense. And I think some of these movies set in Africa, regardless of the country, are often really, move along slowly. There's a slowness to it. And I think that largely because of maybe a more agrarian culture, people are walking long distances. They're not riding cars or buses, at most bicycles. Anyway, the movie Yesterday is so slow. It has to do with the HIV and AIDS epidemic, especially, I don't know what year that movie was filmed, but there's a slowness and a beauty also to this movie that I want to highlight and make mention of. Thoughts on that, John? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely moves along slow. I kept looking at Sarah as I was watching this and like, when is this all going to get resolved?
Yeah, I mean,
like, everyone seems to hate each other. There's like 15 minutes left in the movie.
Yeah. And it's not a super lengthy movie. And I did think that at one point. I'm like, wow. And I mentioned it because Mike was kind of struggling with that. And he watched it with me. But I thought, no, this is so right and so true to where this takes place. And I would say that time is even a character in the movie.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just that.
Absolutely.
Whew. Well, thank you for this. I think these are worthy podcasts. I'd love to hear people's thoughts after they've watched the movie. I heard from a few people saying, oh, I watched that a while back. I'll have to rewatch it and take a listen. So shoot your emails my way, producer@anitalustria.com. Would love to hear your thoughts on the movie and on the podcast and your thoughts based on that. Parting words, anything, John? No.
Good luck. Stay safe. Stay sane.
Yes, and stay sheltered in place.
So watch a few other movies and maybe consider doing this with some people you know over Zoom, Skype, Google Hangouts, whatever you do.
Right on.
Go and spread the wealth.
I love that. And as always, keep the conversation going.